on my left, and all of you who have needed assistance with hearing or any other device have already been taken care of, I believe, so I appreciate that. If at any time the proceedings are moving too quickly for you, let us know, and we'll try to back up and slow it down. I am going to now open a public hearing on Senate Bill 757. Tradition in our committee, we'll have the committee administrator talk about the bill, and then we'll go into testimony. But first, I need to remind folks, if you have any kind of a cell phone or electronic device, please turn it off so that you do not interrupt those who are testifying. So I appreciate that. And with that, Ms. Richardson, could you let us know what this bill does?
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 757 establishes a governor-appointed, Senate-confirmed Board of Trustees for the Oregon State School for the Deaf. It specifies board membership and duties. It transfers the duties for operating the Oregon State School for the Deaf from the Superintendent of Public Instruction to the Board. It authorizes the Board of Trustees to appoint the Director of the Oregon State School for the Deaf. It charges the Department of Education with staffing the board and the director, declares an emergency, and would take effect July 1, 2007. It has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Richardson. And I will just give folks sort of a brief overview today. I introduced this bill in response to the concerns that were being raised about the Oregon School for the Deaf, and I understand now that the Oregon School for the Blind would like to be involved in this piece of legislation as well, and that's totally fine. And I've invited Senate President Peter Courtney to come today and give a brief presentation about the history of the governance of those schools. And Senator Courtney was gracious enough to sign on to the bill as a co-chief sponsor with me as well. And I know he cares deeply about these two schools and what they mean to Oregon. So with that, I'm going to let Senate President Peter Courtney come up and testify first.
Thank you, Chair Walker and Committee Administrator Richardson. My name is Peter Courtney. I'm a state senator, District 11, which includes portions, which includes Woodburn, Jervis, and portions of Salem. And the School of the Deaf is in my Senate district. I live at 2925 Island View Drive North here in Salem, 9303. And I've asked my legislative assistant, James Atkins, also to join me to be a resource because he helped build my testimony and he has been with me throughout the School for the Deaf situation, which developed several months ago. I'm here, Senator Walker, to testify strongly in support of your bill, Senate Bill 757. And let me begin by saying that I attended the they had a major public hearing in their gymnasium regarding the crisis, and I was there that night, and James was sitting beside me, and I remember at the time a lot of people testified, but there were some remarks about governance of the school and the need to have better representation, and I thought that was interesting. And then it wasn't until you approached me in your very noble way and suggested that a piece of legislation should be introduced, and you'd like to do it to create a board of governance for that school, and you were gracious enough to allow me to sign on with you. But I want to give all the credit to you, Senator Walker. I wish the full committee was here to hear this, that it is you and your leadership, which is not only as chair of this committee, but is one who's very sensitive to the governance of schools, and now you're taking a lead in this area as well. So high praise to you, Senator Walker, and thank you for being allowing me to sign on to your piece of legislation and to follow your lead.
Thank you, Senator.
This School for the Deaf, has a personal connection to me and my family. When my sons attended Blanchette Catholic High School, at that time, at least early on, they were a 1A school, and two of my sons competed in basketball. I've spent many times in the gymnasium or School for Deaf watching basketball games, and in track and field. I remember even a state track meet, which my son was in, and he and my oldest son, and I remember the 100-meter dash. There's a picture on the wall. He was competing in that heat, and there was an Oregon School for the Deaf young man in that heat. I think he beat my son. So there is a history of my family with the School for the Deaf, and long, many hundred years ago, when I was living in an apartment just one block from the School for the Deaf, I would walk to the end of the block and I would jog. Many times I jogged. I can't tell you the number of laps I did on their cinder track, so I am very, very familiar with that facility. I've jogged it, I've walked it, I've been in the gymnasiums. One of my sons, even when we played baseball out here at Parrish, for some reason they got an upper room in one of the buildings and they did some even practice hitting in it. So I think that was my youngest son, Adam. So there is a history with the Courtney family in that school, and not to mention the fact that when I was in the city council, it was in my district. When I was in the state legislature, in the House, it's in my district. And as a state senator, it's in my district, the School for the Deaf. So it's a school I'm probably as familiar with as any school there is in the state of Oregon. And so I'm here today to say how delighted I am that you have discovered a way to perhaps allow them a greater voice. You said something I did not know it came from you, but thankfully now I always take orders in life. You said, I'm here to give you a little history. You better be right, James. So here we go. It's my understanding it was founded in 1870 to educate hearing-impaired children in Oregon. And the first operating board, there was an operating board, and this fascinated me, was the governor, the secretary of state, state treasurer. That was the operating board of the School for the Deaf. And between 1870 and 1900, the school had four different locations in Salem. Didn't know that. Of course, there's a lot of things I don't know, as you know, Senator Walker. The school was even closed for a short period due to lack of funds. The Oregon School for Deaf finally moved to its current location in 1910. In 1913, the legislature established a board of control for overseeing the operations of the school. And then the board again was comprised of the governor, the secretary of state, and the state treasurer. This structure remained until 1969, the year that I came to Oregon, my Oregon, all by myself with my single little suitcase. July 9th is when I came here. Between 1969 and 1971, the school was run by a special school district, didn't know it, and then in 1971, it was placed under the supervision of the Department of Education, where it remains today. So, there's a fascinating history to hear as to governance of this school. And maybe you know all this, Senator Walker, but I didn't know it. So it isn't like this idea that you've remarkably come up with is something that's so novel and new. There's been concepts of this before, in fact, existence of it. The Oregon School of Deaf is not a regular school. It demands a special understanding of the issues that face the deaf community. This piece of legislation will provide for that understanding. The bill establishes a board of trustees for the Oregon School for the Deaf and changes the board and charges the board with its operation. The bill also specifies that the trustees have necessary experience and understanding to make decisions in the best interest of the students and the community. I believe these changes are necessary. And also, I want to note for the record, I was reading the legislation, and I noticed, I thought of you, Senator Walker, because you're all over this bill in terms of its right, how it's written. The appointments which will be made by the governor to the Board of Trustees will be subject to the approval of the Oregon State Senate. And I'm sure, Senator Walker, should this become law, and I hope it does, that you will be on guard on the Senate floor when those appointments would move to the Senate floor. So thank you, really, Senator Walker. Congratulations to you. I'm humbled by the fact you'd even let me be on a piece of legislation with you. And I'm always humble when I come before this committee, which I begin to think I'm almost a regular. If I'm not here every day, I feel lost. So I can have another good day and finish out the week strong because I appeared before the Senate Education and General Government Committee. Thank you very much.
I appreciate that, Mr. President. And I'm going to open a full committee now that I have some members here to hear what we have to say today. And I appreciate the history. As you know, I share a love of history with you. I just think we learn a lot from our history, and so I'd ask the Department of Education to provide us with some background about the previous governance structure of these two institutions. And I did not attend any of those public hearings. And came about this idea sort of independently in a conversation with someone from the school supportive community would come to my office and thought, well, how can we solve this problem? How can we get Jane Mulholland back? And my comment was, and I'll make this statement here, that this bill doesn't allow us to interfere in that employment decision that was made. We can't go back in time. What we can do is go forward in time, Mr. President, and I think you would agree, and give these two schools their own right to govern themselves, much like every other school district in the state has its own right to govern and make decisions about what's in their best interest. And I think that's our role here, the goal of this bill, and I think you would agree with that.
Chair Walker, you know, you and I have talked about this in the confines of your office, my office, on occasion about the situation out there, and we both agree that we don't want to be into micromanaging the supervision of the school for the deaf. That was something I think we both concluded. But we felt we had to do something to try to help that school, help that community, and help the state of Oregon. And I think what you've come up with here really does that. So I think it's a very positive step. And you know, I said in my testimony, and I meant it, because of my relationship with Western Oregon University, which is very much into special education, it is a very special school that requires, and I know we're talking about the School of the Blind too, but you know, they require a special type of oversight or trustees, and I think that's the beauty of your board. And so yes, I think you and I are on the same page on this, and we've talked many times, and then I think you carefully waited and patiently drew a piece of legislation that reflects real thought and real attempt to try to understand what we're dealing with here and to try to bring people together at a very difficult time. So I follow your lead. I don't know what's coming behind me in terms of testimony, but I do think the legislature does have a responsibility, I do, regarding the situation we're under, that not in a negative way, if you know, and you and I have talked about that, mm-hmm. but I think this is a positive way to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. I would agree, and we're not here to make a decision today. We're here to gather evidence and hear from folks about what they like about the bill, don't like about the bill, and then we'll move forward with further discussion, because this is something brand new, and it's going to take us some time to work through the details.
And Chair Walker, nothing in my written or verbal testimony would I hope you would demand or even suggest that nothing be done to the bill as it's written. You know, like all pieces of legislation, that's the beauty of the public hearing and work sessions. It could be this bill needs adjustments or amendments, and I understand that. So while I spoke very forcefully to this legislation, both verbally and in writing, I love this process, the dynamic process to get input. So I'm very much open to your leadership, the committee's leadership, the administrator's leadership as to, after you've heard, if this needs adjustments. But it's just that, you know, this is really well written on its face, and I realize, again, I look for your direction. This is a nice piece of legislation.
Thank you. Any member of the committee have a question? All right, Mr. President, I appreciate that you
took
your time out today. All right, we have three folks who are going to come up from the Oregon School for the Deaf community. I'd ask you to all come up at the same time. Jane Mulholland, Robin Brown, and Robert Scheffel. And if you have written testimony, just provide it to Ms. Gravel here, and then take your seat. Ms. Mulholland, were you going to go first with this group? All right.
Okay. Chair Walker and members of the committee, my name is Jane Mulholland. I live at 1985 Shimawa Road Northeast in Kaiser, Oregon, 97303, and I'm here today as a private citizen. However, I have been a public servant for the past 17 years. For three of those years, I was an assistant superintendent at the Oregon Department of Education, where I was responsible for four statewide programs, the Early Intervention, Early Childhood Special Education Program, the Low Incidence Regional Programs, the Oregon School for the Deaf and Oregon School for the Blind, and was responsible for managing a budget of over $160 million during that time. The other 14 and a half years, I was at the Oregon School for the Deaf. From 1999 until December 29th, 2006, I served as director of the school. And at the same time, I was director of special schools, which means I provided a liaison function between the School for the Blind and the School for the Deaf and the Oregon Department of Education. I've had the opportunity to be in front of this committee and the Ways and Means Education Subcommittee on numerous occasions to provide budgetary and program information about the schools, and I thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning. I'm testifying in support of Senate Bill 757 with the recommendation that the bill be expanded to include the Oregon School for the Blind and that they, along with the Oregon School for the Deaf, be removed from the Oregon Department of Education and be established each with its own board that would report to the governor. My support of this bill with the recommended changes is based on my experience and perspective as the director of the School for the Deaf and director of special schools, and it's motivated by the love that I have for these two programs and the intimate belief I have and understanding of the critical role they play in providing a full range of options for students, public school options for students in Oregon who are deaf or visually impaired. The Department of Education is a state agency. The School for the Deaf and the School for the Blind are not agencies, they are schools. And to operate schools within the rules, regulations, and bureaucracy of a large state agency is a challenge, and I believe that it inhibits the two programs from providing the most efficient and most effective services that they are capable of. I also don't believe that decisions and actions that are taken are always in the best interest of the school, and it is not my intent to vilify any individual at the Department of Education, but to point out the difficulties of operating schools within a bureaucracy, and I want to give you some examples of that. The Oregon School for the Deaf operates a number of student businesses, and for many years it was our intent to try to provide them the most realistic experience possible. Schools all over the state operate student businesses, and they operate them in a way that truly replicates a real business. And to that end, we tried and tried to find a way to be allowed to open checking accounts for each of these businesses so that students would have the actual experience of making withdrawals and deposits and keeping their books in the same way a business would. But we were never able to overcome the hurdles and the roadblocks within the agency to be able to do that. and therefore, the students have been denied of the best opportunity they could to experience a real business. Technology. For many years, there was a great deal of pressure by the department for the School for the Deaf to select a specific type of technology to use in our classrooms because they wanted the school to use the same technology as the staff at the department used. The school staff made decisions on technology based on what we believed was the best educational practices for students and what would lead to industry standard skills for the students. And so persisted in using the technology that we thought was best, but met with incredible resistance from the department, even to the point of having our ordering impeded for several years because they were attempting to have us change to their technology. And it wasn't as though the department was trying to impose their technology perspectives on other schools in the state, but because we were part of the agency, for their consistency, they wanted us to move to their system. Nursing services. Due to the retirement of the nursing supervisor at the School for the Blind and School for the Deaf last spring and the subsequent hiring of a person who had a lower level of licensure, the schools were left and are still left with some health care needs that cannot be met. And to that end, last summer, I initiated a contract that would provide supplemental nursing services for the two schools. After numerous meetings, phone calls, emails, as of the end of December, that contract still had not been approved for processing. A new bus. The school submitted paperwork in November for the purchase of a new bus for the schools, and it was submitted in plenty of time for processing. It needed to be processed by December 31st in order to avoid additional costs that would be imposed as of January 1. The paperwork sat on someone's desk for 2 weeks. When we inquired about it, it was sent back to the school saying that we had used the wrong form. We checked with ODE procurement. They said, no, the form was the correct one. It was sent back to the appropriate person. It again remained on a desk for a period of time, and when it was finally processed, it was past the December 31st deadline, which means that the two schools and the state of Oregon now will be paying $8,000 more for this bus than had it been processed in a timely manner. Facility study. OSB and OSD set aside money about 6 years ago from a bequest that was given to the schools for the purpose of conducting a comprehensive facilities evaluation process for the schools. Each time we asked if we could go forward with that, we were told to wait. This work would have been and should have been fundamental to the work that the group did in response to the budget note that was attached to our budget during the last legislative session. But instead, without that study, the group went forward, made their recommendations without intimate knowledge of the program needs or the facility needs for the two schools. Budget freeze. Recently, ODE has established a general fund freeze on all spending of those monies, hiring, travel, purchase of furniture, etc. I presume that is because they're in a shortfall situation. And the School for the Deaf and School for the Blind, as you know, operate under a separate budget that is part of but independent of the Department of Education's budget. We track that budget very carefully, making adjustments month to month as necessary. That budget is right on track to be carrying the schools through the end of the year, but because we are part of the agency, that freeze has extended to the two schools. Safety. OSD has widely communicated their concern about safety at the School for the Deaf. However, this concern did not emerge until January of 2007. And between January and June of 2005, ODE contracted and paid for three separate studies to look at OSD's organizational structure, at OSD's leadership and school climate, and at OSD's safety. None of the three studies was completed, though contractors were paid, and no report or feedback was provided to OSD so that improvements, if warranted, could be made. 4 years ago, Bill Brawley, who was then the deputy superintendent at the Department of Education, asked me if I thought that the school should be operated by the Department of Education, and I know at that time they were beginning to have this conversation among themselves. I said I thought it depended on the superintendent, that if the superintendent was supportive and people understood the schools and could provide advocacy, that it was a good place. I've worked directly under three superintendents, and one of those was extremely supportive of the schools. And during that period of time, the schools flourished. The administration across the entire Department of Education, in every department, the administrators understood the programs, were committed to them, and supportive. That was one of the easiest experiences I ever had in budget development because everyone else in the department was doing the advocacy for us because they believed in and understood the programs. And at that point, I would have said, yes, it's an advantage because the agency has resources that they can bring to support the schools and provide social security. But that's not the case today. The directors of OSB and OSD are not included in meaningful communication or decision-making at the department. There has been virtually no direct involvement from ODE in the school's operation or to support the program quality. The administration of OSD does not have a good understanding of the schools and their needs, and therefore the advocacy doesn't exist. And this may seem minor, but even in monthly staff meetings in the department of which OSB and OSD are a part, when kudos would be given for each of the programs in that department, the School for the Deaf and School for the Blind were not mentioned. And in an email that I saw in December, which went out to stakeholders of ODE, again, each of the programs in that department was highlighted, something they were doing that was good. No mention of the schools. And I sent an email to the author and I said I offered a number of things that could be highlighted about both of the schools, and the response I received was it was our job to do our advocacy. Another example of a lack of understanding by the department was a recent article that was in the Statesman Journal that compared the number of SIMS, Certificates of Initial Masteries, that are awarded by high school, local high schools. And OSD was included in this comparison of the schools. And, of course, the number of SIMS awarded by the School for the Deaf was significantly lower than those of the other local high schools. And I say, of course, because this is an apples-to-oranges comparison. If you were to, the only way you could make a comparison between OSD and the other schools in the area would be to carve out only the special education students in each of those high schools and say, now what percentage of those students received the SIM? 100% of the students at the School for the Deaf are special education students, and most of them come in the middle school or high school years, anywhere from 2 to 8 years behind their grade level, and they come to us from public school programs. And so to compare the School for the Deaf awarding of SIMS with other schools where 11% of their students are special education is just not appropriate. And this information was given to the Statesman Journal by the Department of Education as part of a request, I'm sure. But to provide that information without either an understanding or an explanation of why you couldn't make an appropriate comparison between the School for the Deaf and the Deaf and the other schools is at best showing a lack of understanding, and at worst, it shows an intent to discredit the schools. And it's not an example of a parent agency that is providing good support to its programs. I know there are many questions that need to be considered as this bill and its possible amendments move forward. I'll be happy to act as a resource to this committee or those working on this bill if I could be of assistance based on my knowledge of the day-to-day operations of the program. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you, and I will be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Mulholland. I have one question because your testimony hit the nail on the head. It's exactly what I was concerned about is this. We have a bureaucracy, a state agency running two schools, and they're acting like the local school board because that's what they're charged with doing. So from some of the things that you illustrated to us today, the response time is slow. It's not exactly the response that you're always looking for or that you get, that you expect. And so those are the problems of not having that local control over your day-to-day operations. Answer me in what way currently, as the former director, how did you report back to the Department of Education? Was it on a daily basis, a weekly basis, a monthly basis? How did that occur?
Chair Walker, the schools are within the Office of Student Learning and Partnerships. That's where my supervisor resided, and I participated on what was called the coordination team for that office, and so I had some opportunity for communication there, attended monthly staff meetings, and as necessary, initiated or responded to emails from my supervisor. Frequency would just depend on the situation. I did not have regular meetings at the department. I guess I would say communication was situational. It was dependent on things that I needed answers to or felt that I needed to communicate.
Whereas in a school board situation or a board of trustees situation, you would have that interaction with the board, and there would be the check and balance there for you and to get quick action on what you needed, correct?
Chairman Walker, yes.
Great. Any questions from the committee?
Excellent testimony, Ms. Mayor.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Ms. Brown or Mr. Schiffel, who would like to go next? You're right in the middle. Go ahead, Mr. Schiffel.
Chris, will you be speaking?
Yes.
You need to speak into a microphone.
Sit right there.
Yes.
Can you hear my hands? Are we good? Is that okay? I just needed to warm up my hands for a moment. So, yeah, I'm not going to be using the microphone. Chris is going to be voicing for me, and you guys can watch my my hands and see everything clearly and listen to the interpreter. So I'm going to be discussing my testimony today.
And you'll need to state your name.
Okay. Good morning, Chair Walker, and distinguished members of the Senate Committee on Education. My name is Robert Scheffel, and as an alumnus and retired educator of Oregon School for the Deaf for a total of 47 years, I would like to take this opportunity to testify here today. I am speaking in entire support of the concept of Senate Bill 757, However, I am absolutely uncomfortable with most sections of the introduction version of this bill. We, the deaf community, believe that this bill needs to be revised in the following areas. The first one, we should change the name from the Board of Trustees to the Board of Directors, and that'll be defined as school board. The second, increasing the number of OSD board members to 7, and on the board at least 4, the majority, those people should be deaf. One person who is an alumni of the Oregon School for the Deaf, one person who is a deaf Oregon resident at large, 2 people who are educational professionals who work with deaf people, one person who is a business official, and 2 people who are parents of a deaf person. Thirdly, removing the authority of the Oregon Department of Education, including Oregon State Superintendent of Public Instruction, reporting to state legislature and or the Office of Governor instead of the Department of Education, the Oregon School for the Blind, OSB, school board should not be combined with OSD school board because their cultures and communities are much different. Each of these special schools should have their own board, their own school board. Also, the OSB school board should be amended to a new part of this bill, and it would be much more convenient to the legislative process. Both OSD and OSB school boards shall have a mutual affairs committee. Which will consist of 3 OSD board members and 3 OSB board members, with a total of 6 committee members. The Mutual Affairs Committee is responsible for reviewing and making recommendations on issues that affect both special schools. For example, budget shared positions, contracting, policies, union contracts, etc. The recommendations from the Mutual Affairs Committee then go back to the 2 school boards for approval, and OSD and OSB directors will be staff to their respective school boards and to the Mutual Affairs Committee. Now, just a comment in general. I strongly believe that a new OSD school board is critical, is a critical public link to the deaf school. First and foremost, school boards look out for deaf students. Education is not a line item on the school board's agenda. It's the only item. It's the only item. When making decisions about the deaf school programs, the school board will incorporate their community's view of what deaf students should know and be able to do. The school board is accessible to the public and accountable for the performance of OSD, and also the education watchdog for their communities, ensuring that deaf students get the best education for the tax dollars spent. Lastly, I strongly recommend the Senate Education Committee amends this above, makes the amendments that I previously mentioned to the bill. Your consideration is greatly appreciated. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to address the Senate Education Committee on this important piece of legislation. I would be happy to take any questions you may have at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Sheffield. That is exactly what I wanted to hear today, were concrete suggestions to change the bill in a way that meets your needs.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
Any questions from the committee? Okay. I really appreciate that you came, and we're going to hear from Ms. Brown now.
Chair Walker and members of the committee, my name is Robin Brown. I live in Salem at 1959 Church Street, Northeast. I'm the parent of three children who are deaf. The youngest one also has significant learning disabilities and cerebral palsy. My involvement with the School for the Deaf began in 1985 when I moved to the state of Oregon looking for an educational program for my son. My direct involvement with the Oregon School for the Deaf will end this June, perhaps next year, when my 19-year-old graduates. He is graduating. He may do an extended school year program. I don't anticipate life connections with OSD ever ending because it has become such a part of who we are as a family. Because we live in Salem, we've had the opportunity to access a full range of options educationally for my kids. They have attended mainstream programs. They've attended our local school district, which happened to be the place that the regional program had their center site program for the deaf of hard of hearing, and they've been at the Oregon School for the Deaf. And for each of them, the idea of least restrictive environment has changed from time to time according to what their needs were and what their skills and weaknesses were. My daughter did quite well in a mainstream program, accessing education through an interpreter. She depended on an interpreter for communication with all of her peers and teachers. My son, on the other hand, thrived when he moved to the School for the Deaf and was able to communicate directly with every child and every adult in his environment. That's what he needed to be fully successful. And don't worry about him. He still has lots of opportunities to live, to learn to live in the hearing world through community activities, sports, and church. And he's the kind of kid who's going to find his way wherever he goes. As a parent, I've had a great deal of experience with the School for the Deaf. I'm also a certified teacher of the deaf and a nationally certified sign language interpreter, and I've worked both in regional programs, local school districts, and at the School for the Deaf. And based on these experiences, I'm here testifying in support of Senate Bill 757 with the recommendation that a school board also be established for the School for the Blind. And it's my recommendation that both schools be moved outside the authority of the Oregon Department of Education. From a parent's perspective, I'd like to explain why. All parents who choose to participate in a public school education make a decision to trust their children to a system which is looking after their best interests, led by knowledgeable and experienced people who know what their individual needs based on their disabilities are. It's become evident to me that that's not what drives the decisions by the Oregon Department of Education at all times. That is what drives my decisions, and I know that's my job. It's also my job to look out for them and make sure that they're getting what they need to get. The ODE website speaks about the roles families and communities play in positively affecting the educational experiences that kids have, and yet repeatedly that's not been my experience with the students at the School for the Deaf. I've had an opportunity working in both local and statewide organizations for parents with deaf kids. And some of what I'm sharing is based on my own experience. Some of it is based on the experiences of the parents that I've worked with and advocated with over the years. And what I've seen is that with each state school superintendent and their administration, policies and procedures shift. This is confusing at best for families who are trying to figure out how to get what their own child needs. Some examples of this are in how students are enrolled. When I first moved here in 1985, the only way a child got into the school for the deaf was to have an appointment with a deputy superintendent and explain why you believed that was the best decision for your child. Fortunately, I was an educator at the time. I can't imagine a parent of a five-year-old who wasn't fairly prepared going into that office and having that kind of discussion. Fortunately for me, the school district we lived in that time in Monmouth had as their special ed director a former teacher of the deaf who saw immediately that this child's best educational placement was placement at the school for the deaf. But I did leave that meeting that day shaking, even as a teacher, and wondering how parents could possibly survive raising kids who were deaf and hard of hearing. I've heard stories from families about how parents hear or don't hear about the school for the deaf as an option on the continuum of services. It's not uncommon still to meet parents who much later in their child's academic career first encounter OSD as an option and often say, I wish I had known about that sooner. I look forward to a time when all families have access to information about all of the options. And I think that can happen when there's a school board looking out for the school. I've seen how a budget decision to close the dorms every weekend has led parents to keep their children in local school programs, not because they felt like the local school program where their child might be the only deaf child was the best option, but because they didn't want to sacrifice that amount of time to transportation every week. I've seen how information is communicated to families and what kind of information is made available to families. And this has been seen most recently in the decision in December to terminate our director. That happened over Christmas vacation without any attempt to communicate with families. When it was brought to our attention and we asked that take place, we were encouraged to do that communication ourselves, which would be lovely if I had access to all of the schools, students, families' information, but I don't.
Who told whom?
The Department of Education told me that they assumed that we would communicate that to one another, that parents would communicate that to one another, because surely we had email lists or something that could do that. It was very confusing. First to have no information, and then to have limited information, and then to still wonder, why did this happen when life looked good to us? We recently had received accreditation both by the National Association, I know I'm not going to say this right, by the group that accredits high school and also the CEASD, which accredits schools for the deaf. So things were looking up, and we were confused. I believe that these are issues, and that there are others as well that can be addressed by building a board which will show a high degree of sensitivity to the goals and needs of the students and their families across the state, not just the students they have now, but students across the state who still need to hear that OSD is an option. And even if the families choose not to come, they still need to know it's an option. One of the things I did as a teacher every year with my 5- and 6-year-olds was to encourage parents to come and sit in my classroom, sit in an older classroom, go to the school for the deaf, sit in their kindergarten classroom, sit in their older classroom, and look at all the options, because I never want parents to have to look back and say, I wish I had, or if I had known. I'd like to see a board that would take on a goal to make that happen for families. I believe that OSD and OSB need to establish their own boards. I know for me as a parent, it's been really important, even as a professional, probably especially as a professional, to meet deaf adults, to know that their lives were what my kids were going to grow up to be, And because of that, I think it's critical to have deaf adults on a board that can impact the school. Educators who have been trained and continue to upgrade their education about what's current in the field. And parents on the board. Parents who have raised their kids successfully. We need the collective wisdom of all of these people to determine the future direction of each school and its impact on our children's educational development. I look around the room today and say, these are the people who are living the hopes and dreams that I've had for my kids. These are the people that my kids are growing up to be. It's time to let OSD and OSB become fully recognized as schools, not just state agencies. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to respond to any questions you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Your testimony was just as important as what we've heard already, and I think you reiterated a line from Mr. Shuffle's testimony that I think is so eloquent and succinct, and that is, education is not a line item on the school board's agenda. It is the only item, and that's exactly what you reiterated. So I appreciate that. Any questions from the committee? All right, I think what we're going to try to do is move along so we can get all the evidence today, and I'd like to leave 10 minutes at the end of the hearing for the Department of Education to talk about the proposal. So thank you very much, and I'll call up the next panel. Colleagues, we're going to hear now from some folks from the Community for the Blind. Neil Kleiwer, I'm hopeful I can pronounce that correctly. Bob Disher and Annie Holsworth, if you'll all three come forward.
Yes, please.
Yeah, Annie, that would probably be good. And Annie, I do hope you introduce your friend.
I will.
Good. I'm a dog lover.
Oh, good.
And it's so hard for me not to want to pet someone's
right.
dog. Even though I know they're working, I have to restrain myself from
yes.
doing that.
Oh, good. Sit over here, honey. Down. Come on.
All right, who would like to go first?
I believe I will.
Okay. Mr. Fisher?
Chair Walker, members of the Education Committee, my name is Robert A. Disher, and I live at 1821 Southwest Foxwood Lane, Dallas, 97338. And barring any sudden change in my employment status after today, I'm currently the technology specialist and an orientation and mobility instructor for the Oregon School for the Blind. Thank you for having me here today. And just so there's no confusion, I have personal leave approved in order to be here with you. You know, it's always been my belief that we want to teach our students to stand up for their beliefs and to not be hindered merely because something feels uncomfortable. And I guess if you're going to be a good teacher, you have to first be a student and experience the lessons that you try to impart on your students. Keeping that in mind, I'm here with you today. It is my belief and the belief of the people that I represent that the Oregon School for the Blind have an independent policy-making board, similar to what you've heard already for the School for the Deaf, a board that would be free from the Department of Education and would be comprised of members from the blindness community. The blindness community has many members. We have students, we have adults, we have educators, we have rehab workers, consumer groups, school districts, regional programs, service clubs, select groups of the medical community, and many more. We are a state school. We are Oregon School for the Blind. By our nature, we serve or should be serving the entire state. Unfortunately, it's brought to our attention on numerous occasions throughout the year that families are not always given the option of placing a student at the school for the blind. But we are nonetheless a state school. Therefore, our community should come from the entire state of Oregon. In our beliefs, the blindness community would be vested shareholders on the board. They would be partners in the education of our children, who would have a voice and not merely be spectators watching the process. They would know what's best for our school and would act accordingly. And although in many cases they lack sight, they would have the vision to do what is right for the students and the school. As with any school, we have a neighborhood in which we reside. We've been in that neighborhood for 130 plus years, and in my opinion, from what I've heard, we've been excellent neighbors. The people in our neighborhood come from all walks of life, and therefore and experiences, and we would like them to be part of our community as well. Being managed by a policy-making board will give our community the voice that it deserves. And in doing so, the community would be better able to put the students at the center of all matters of discussion, which is, as I've heard already mentioned in other testimony, right where they belong, and we solidly concur with that. The board that we're proposing, so that it has equal representation among our community, would be that we would have one member from a service organization or a group that is comprised of service club members, one parent, one member from the Oregon Commission for the Blind, one former staff or student of the Oregon School for the Blind, one regional educator of the blind and visually impaired, and two from various consumer groups representing our population, such as either the National Federation of the Blind or the American Council of the Blind. You know, I'm not sure what's more stressful, taking a 15-year-old on a first experience behind the wheel or testifying here today. But while I was at DMV the other day with my son, I happened to pick up a Oregon roadmap, the official roadmap it says here. And on the cover, the slogan caught my attention. And it says, "We love dreamers." And I hope that that's true. And I hope it's... I'll just go with it. And I hope it's not just for the people who read our maps or drive on our roads, but for the people who make our laws and teach in our schools. The Oregon School for the Blind staff and students right now are, in a real sense, dreamers. And it is our hope and prayer that you share these dreams with us. We look forward to the day when our students achieve their full potential in life, using the talents given to them by God and fine-tuned and nurtured by the caring, dedicated, and competent staff, such as what we have at the School for the Blind. We look forward to the day when the only thing we have to worry about is how to best meet our students' IEP goals, and not whether or not our campus is going to be sold out from under us, and we forced to move to another property. And with all due respects to my friends and colleagues at the School for the Deaf, the property of a school that is as different from ours as night is from day in many respects. We look forward to the day to be given the opportunity, the freedom, and the means to initiate and provide our services to all blind and visually impaired students in regional programs throughout the state, and not just those who are a convenient short drive away from our campus, I echo the comments I heard earlier when we have students, because of the nature of our program, we have to send everybody home on a Friday. They have to come back on a Sunday, which is fine if you live within an hour or two of the campus. But if you're living in Nyssa, where I was a month ago, or if you're living in Medford or Ashland, that's not practical. It is, it's just not right. And finally, we look forward to the day when the Oregon School for the Blind is run by people who have a connection to our community, who are committed to our success, who have compassion, and the integrity to do what's right for our students both today and in the future. In other words, we look forward to the day when we can have our own board, make our own decisions to run the school in the way that's best for our students. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Disher. That was excellent testimony, and I hope it was much easier than teaching a 15-year-old to drive. All right, Mr. Clywer, am I? Clywer? Clywer.
I'll give it, it's Cleaver.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson, Senator Walker, and distinguished legislator. I live at 4730 Auburn Road here in Salem, and I'm a retired director of the School for the Blind. I was going to give a little bit of historical perspective, but Senator Courtney kind of stole my thunder on that. And the School for the Blind pretty much followed the same course that the School for the Deaf did. The only difference was I was there. I came to the School for the Blind in 1966, and we were under the Board of Control. We were under Governor Hatfield and Governor McCall and Governor Straub and the treasurers and secretaries at that time. And by law, they had to come out to the school at least four times a year, and they were there many more times, and they were great governors. They came to our programs. Governor Straub would take some of our students camping with their family, and also First Lady Straub, when she was when Mr. Straub was governor, she volunteered for 5 years on a regular schedule at the School for the Blind. And so we were on a first name basis. They did come around, and then that's right. We were governed by a board, and those were golden years for us. We had good support, and we're very pleased with that arrangement. But actually, it became unrealistic for the governors as the state began to grow and as the government grew to be able to do this. And so the legislature created a special schools division. And the special schools division was administrator and a deputy administrator and a budget person and a secretary. And they had their office at the School for the Blind. But I believe they were political appointments, and they knew nothing about schools that I could tell, and certainly nothing about deaf and blind children. And but they did have to do something, so they wrote policies and they micromanaged. And the director resigned in protest. And so then the legislature took another look at it, and that special schools division lasted one biennium. And then the school was placed under the Department of Education. And when they were placed under the Department of Education, we could feel the weight of that change. And bureaucracy has been mentioned a couple of times, and I think is an appropriate word. Webster defines it as governing through a number of departments or sections, each with limited jurisdiction or authority. And whereas we had one person in the office who handled the budget, and he handled personnel. He was a budget and personnel person for the School for the Blind, and that was the time before computers. He did it with books. We had 125 kids, and as near as I could tell, as principal of the school, it worked out great. But when we joined the school, when we became members of the Department of Education, then these functions went to a different building. And then you fill out a form, and as Jane mentioned, it sometimes drops in a black hole, and you don't know where it is, and you make some phone calls. My experience has been overall that, rather than being supportive, we were questioned. We were many times given negative feedback. And some of the, I indicated that the governors came down to the school four times a year by law. This would be a good law for superintendents of public instruction, because I'm sure that a couple of them barely knew my name. And so I think this is something that we miss, and that's those who control our lives and control the program be involved in where we are and what's happening. Bigger is not always better, because moving from a single school to a department, everything slows down. Everything is more complicated. The quality of the program is diminished, and it costs more money. Concerns have been expressed about finding a quality board that would work for free. And I have been privileged to have been appointed by Governor Kulongoski to the Commission for the Blind, which is the board that runs the Commission for the Blind. And that agency is similar in size to the School for the Blind, perhaps a bit larger. But I have been very impressed with, this will be my third year, I'm on my third year, with the board and its oversight of the Commission for the Blind. The board consists of an attorney as board chairman. President of the Oregon Blind Veterans Association is another one, an ophthalmologist, electrical business owner, a small business owner, retired Providence Medical Center administrator, who is a nun, a technology project manager, and a retired School for the Blind director. Five of those members are blind. And the ophthalmologist and myself are sighted. And that's a well-working, cohesive program. When I came there, the board had to approve any expenditures over $500. We kind of lifted that because that was a little too much micromanaging. Mm-hmm. But it is being managed, and it's being managed well, and I believe it's a very well-run agency. So, and the other advantage, as I said, we work for free. I think if the Oregon School for the Blind were run by a board of directors, it would be better supervised. It would be able to more quickly adapt to the children's needs. There would be less bureaucratic entanglement, and it would be more efficient. So I thank you for this opportunity to speak at this hearing, and if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Claywer. I think we're going to hold our questions because we have a lot more folks and we actually are running behind. But I so appreciate your history and the depth of knowledge that you have, and that you work for free by doing such a wonderful service for Oregon. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And your suggestions are all very good. Ms. Holdsworth, you're next.
Well, good morning, Chair Walker and the members of the committee. My name is Annis, also known as Annie Holdsworth, and this is my guide dog, Charm.
who's taking a nap.
And, we're talking to you.
I reside in Albany, Oregon. I have been legally blind for 53 years. And although I've been active in my community for many years, serving on many boards and being a leader of service organizations, I volunteered at the Oregon School for the Blind for a year, and then they hired me as a member of the staff. And I am Bob Disher's teaching assistant in the computer lab. I think a school board would be wonderful because I think it would be an asset to the students. For example, this was a recent happening. We had a girls getaway program planned. All the funds were coming from a $20,000 donation from the Elks. Had nothing to do with school funds. But we had a girls getaway weekend planned, and it was planned in January. We were going to have the girls come from all over the state, and we were going to do fun things for them. For example, learn how to download iTunes to their iPods, learn how to do instant messaging because we have all that capability on the talking computers. We were going to do activities of daily living like dressing properly and doing makeup and just having a fun weekend, maybe going to the movies, and almost like a slumber party weekend. Well, we were told we could do it by ODE. Then we were told we couldn't do it. And now we were told again that we can do it as long as it's not held at the Oregon School for the Blind. So now we're trying to plan this weekend for an Eastern Oregon trip. I'm positive that if we'd had a school board, there would not have been this off and on situation happening. Plus, we probably would have had three girls getaway programs by now. We're also doing something for the boys. I'm just talking about the one that I was involved in with the girls. I would love to see something like this being able to happen at the School for the Blind, because as I travel around to the high schools and I talk to visually blind or blind girls, they tell me they have no friends at school. And this absolutely breaks my heart. This was one of the focuses of this girls' getaway, was to bring girls together, and maybe through email they can stay to be friends and maybe make lifelong friends. So I think that if we had a school board that would care and have a particular interest in students and what goes on at the school, I think it would be a wonderful thing. So may I have any questions?
Well, I don't think we have any right now because we need to use the rest of the time for everyone else, but your testimony has just been incredible. We really appreciate
thank you for all that
you've had to say, and thank you, Charm, for coming. All right, I'm going to quickly call up three more folks. Elizabeth Rooney, she's come from a long ways away. Dorothy Johnson and Margie Morgan. If you, all three of you, will come up, and I'm going to have to limit your testimony to just a couple minutes. If you have written testimony, we can read that, so if you'll just summarize. And then we have three more folks after that, and then we've got to close this hearing for today. Are you Ms. Rooney?
Yes, I am.
Okay, why don't you get started while the others are being seated?
Okay, my name is Elizabeth Russo Rooney. I am from Cave Junction, Oregon. Do you want the address?
No, that's fine.
And yes, I did come a long way, and it's a very important issue, and it's worth every mile. I am currently the president of the National Federation of the Blind of Oregon, and therefore speak for a large number of people who are not able to be here. I am blind myself. And have also served 6 years on the commission board as a commissioner, so have some experience in participating in a board-run agency.
And you likewise serve for free?
Absolutely, and I still do.
Okay.
I will make this brief and basically would like to ditto everything that's been said already. I'm very much in support of a board for the Oregon School for the Blind and for the Deaf. I believe that it was brought up before that the need for those two boards to be separate directed towards the issues of the school that they're working with. I would like to underline, too, what Annis was saying in terms of the numbers of residents at the school is not a good reflection of how many children are served by the school for the blind. Mm-hmm. And the importance for children who are in schools where often they are the only blind child, the opportunity for weekend and other outreach programs that are offered through the school for the blind are very critical, not only for the skills that they teach, but for the socialization and the children feeling included. And there are other children like them. And as a blind person, I would like to say that issues relating to blindness require specific training, technology, and skilled teachers. And so I believe that as a member of the blind community, having a board that would specifically direct the issues and needs related to blindness would be critical and very advisable. Thank you.
Thank you. It sounds like you folks feel the same way as the Oregon School for the Deaf, that your school would be so much more enriched if you had more local control.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. And seated next to you is...
Hi. Good morning, Chairman Walker and honorary members of the committee. My name is Dorothy Johnson, and I'm here representing the Oregon School for the Deaf Alumni Association. I'm a graduate of OSD from 1952, and I did actually work at the Missouri, Oregon, and Texas Schools for the Deaf, and also in a community college in Texas, so a total of 15 years. I have wonderful work experience in Texas at their school because the school was actually run very efficiently and effectively based on their experience of having a board of directors at their school. I support the concept of House Bill 757. I mean, Senate Bill 757, thank you, that was the interpreter error, and that both schools, both OSD and OSB, independently have school boards. I am not in support of the concept of continuing involvement with the Oregon Department of Education. Any school should be independently run, and each local school district should have a school board in the same ways that these schools should have. ODE has already demonstrated their lack of understanding of the special needs of students who are deaf or blind. There's permanent and repetitive education of ODE staff and understanding issues of students who are deaf and blind on every four-year basis subsequent to each election. Having a superintendent or a supervisor of any of each of these schools would be much more effective. Things need to be delivered in a timely manner, which they are not. For example, the situation with the school bus, which was mentioned earlier, and other school needs. The schools need to be operated as two independent schools rather than under a bureaucracy. Also, currently unqualified staff are being forced to be placed in both schools, and also misuse of OSD and OSB funds on occasion. This persistent study that occurs in both schools is not effective and is a waste of state dollars. The school board will serve as a buffer to protect the children and also people who are working in both environments. The school board will be able to deal with those issues much more effectively. The school should have a right to both hire and fire a director, and board members will be making final decisions on this merger of the schools or not. So I would be happy to respond to any questions from the committee. If not, thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. That was the kind of testimony that we were looking for today, and we appreciate it. Ms. Morgan, I believe you're next.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Senate committee members. My name is Margie Morgan. I'm the president of the Oregon Association of the Deaf, and that was founded in 1921. I am an OSD alum, and my deaf granddaughter is also a future alum of OSD. Today I testify in support of the concept of Senate Bill 757, that a deaf school, our deaf school, should have an independent board of directors as public schools have throughout the state. My comments are similar to those said before, so I won't repeat them, but just that I believe that an OSD board of directors will primarily represent expertise in the field and the operation of an Oregon School for the Deaf, will work closely with OSD students and parents, staff, and community, and the board of directors, that they will have a very strong commitment to the improvement of education and training of deaf students, that they will be able to have qualified staff with fluency in American Sign Language to raise the expectations of the quality of education, to be aware of deaf culture and students' needs, that also that we will be able to develop a school policy that provides excellent living skill training and quality of education for students, and have the authority to hire and fire staff as needed, also provided the necessary student and staff budget necessary to support a school of this sort in the state of Oregon, and administer a budget, and then lastly, to work effectively to not be under the Oregon Department of Education. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify, and I would be glad to answer questions of the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Morgan. We are so appreciative of the effort that you all have made to come today, and they're excellent ideas, and we're just going to keep gathering all this information and decide what to do later. But thank you for coming. I have three people left to testify, and I'm going to have to make it really short because we're really crunched. Charlene Hoyland and Rob Bartel and then Nancy Latini from the department. If you could just all come up. And, you know, you might not all agree with each other about things, but you're going to get to know each other quite well. Ms. Latini, if I'll have you sit on the end there, and we'll have you back clean up. I just want to hear from the department. And Mr. Bartel and Ms. Hoyland, if you could just summarize your testimony for us, because I know you've got written testimony, and that would be great. I think we've heard from a lot of folks today, and just give us something new, and that would be great. So identify yourself, please.
My name is Charlene Hoyland. I live in Salem. I am a staff member at the Oregon School for the Deaf. I'm a library media specialist. And I'm also the president of the State Teachers Education Association, which represents it's the union that represents the teachers at OSB and OSD. And I was going to share, it's in my testimony, I have a long history with the school, going back to volunteering there when I was in seventh grade.
Oh, wow.
In 1965. So when I graduated with my master's degree, I ended up teaching in Southern Oregon, actually, in a regional program for deaf and hard of hearing for 11 years, and then finally came back home, and meaning school is home also for me in 1988. And I want to support pretty much everything that's been said so far about having independent boards for both schools. I like the makeup that we've heard today of the board membership. I think
of seven members.
Yes, and the way they've set them up, I think, for both schools, who would be represented on there. I think that's sounding pretty good to me.
Okay.
We'd like to be out from under ODE and report to the governor if that's an option. And we know that's been done in many other states effectively, so we're hoping that can work for us here in Oregon. We at the school care deeply about, at both schools, about the students and their needs. And it's very difficult for us with a shifting focus all the time. We're constantly concerned about whether or not we're going to have funding from the legislature, whether or not they're going to be closing the schools or selling the property. And it would, I think if we had a governing board, we'd be able to focus more on the students, which is what we really want to do. So thank you very much for letting me testify.
And that's great. Those are the extra things we needed to hear, and I appreciate that. And we've had some really good testimony today. Mr. Bartel, nice to see you again.
Nice to see you. Thank you very much, Senator Walker, Chairperson Walker. I would like to identify myself as Rob Bartel. I live at on a ranch outside of Staten, Oregon. I have been a sponsor. My business that I own has been a sponsor at the School for the Deaf for the past 5 years. I've tried to help supplement where state funds couldn't come in to provide necessary equipment and activities. It's been an incredible pleasure for me to be involved with that. Basically, I'd like to take two opportunities. First of all, I would like to thank you personally for the leadership that you've shown. I think Senator Courtney stated it very eloquently. Your leadership is not only vital in this issue, but it shows that there is a degree of concern and accountability in our government, which is sorely lacking in many other areas. And it really reassures so many of us as just citizen activists. I'm just a businessman. That's all I am. And that means that I see my government at work, and it really pleases me. The two issues that I want to do address very quickly is that in the past 5 years, I've been involved in a business-to-student relationship. A dear friend of mine, Don Lorenzen, is the former retired administrator at the School for the Deaf, and like all friends do, he happens to politicians all the time. He sucked me into this program, and in the beginning, of course, I did it out of friendship, because I must admit to you, I'm a hearing person, and I came into the deaf community very ignorant. I'm just a hearing person who has four adult sons who I'm very proud of, who have gone through the hearing system, so I had no... I came into it just totally blind. Well, I left, and I'm still involved.
Yes.
Blind and deaf in many cases. Yes. And the bottom line is I want to just leave you with one story, which brings it all into perspective. At the end of the senior year of all of the high school students at the School for the Deaf, and I assume they might have a similar program, I'm not familiar with that at the School for the Blind, there's a senior project. And this is a year-long project that the students work with the teachers on in teaching them some kind of practicality to their education. Well, I am about as computer illiterate as... Well, the lovely lady who brought the dog probably could do a seeing eye dog could do better than I can do with a computer. So I'm always intrigued with these young people and their talents in this area. Last year, we had a young man who, and you brought there myself, and there were about six other judges, some who are business people such as myself, some who are educators, to judge these projects. We score these students, and this is part of their senior grade and part of their graduation requirement. This young man sat down with me and showed me computer animation that stunned me. I didn't realize that you could do those kind of things on computer. And I was looking at a young man, 17, 18 years old, who was light years ahead of me. And I'm stepping back and saying to myself in this whole process, am I looking at a future Steve Jobs? Or perhaps, you know, because I'm an old person, a Walt Disney. Because here is our state system at work in a very practical, non-testing environment, something that I, as a businessman, could understand and appreciate. Now, my big thing is, not only do I support Senate Bill 757, but I think it is absolutely vital that this legislation go through now. Because the current conditions at the School for the Deaf, and I'm going to call it, with the Department of Education, cultural ignorance, is such that they are putting people into leadership positions right now who are not meaningly doing damage to the school, but they're not allowing the school to go forward because these people have absolutely no qualifications to deal with this culture. And so what I'm saying is an independent board, which has been reiterated numerous times here today, could relate and I think better serve not only the students, because that's what it's all about. It's about the kids. But making our government more fiscally responsible and more responsible to serving the needs of all of our citizens. Thank you so very much for allowing me to be here today.
Thank you, Mr. Bartel, and I appreciate that as a businessman you became interested in the deaf community, not because you had any family members, but simply because someone asked you to.
That's correct.
And you have learned so much and given so much, so thank you.
I've received more in return, let me assure you.
I'm sure you have. All right, Ms. Lentiti, can you, you're with the Department of Ed, can you sum up in about 5 minutes what the department feels about, what they think about this legislation? And what is your comment today?
Chair Walker, less than 5 minutes. Chair Walker, co-chair Cruz had just walked out. Members of the committee, my name is Nancy Latini for the record. I'm the assistant superintendent at the Department of Education for the Office of Student Learning and Partnerships, and I am here today to talk about the bill. I'll highlight some things. First, I want to say that you'll be surprised that we're not opposing this bill. We're not opposing many of the things that the people said today. There are some comments that perception does become reality, and those are things that we don't need to talk about today.
Okay.
I do need to let you know for the record, however, that my experience in education has been 35 years in public education, much, much longer than at the Department of Education. I understand some of the perceptions that were noted today.
Thank you.
I also want to let you know that in that time, all of it was spent in special education except for 1 year, and seven of those years were overseeing programs for sensory impaired students. I appreciate the fact that you're not into talking about personnel issues, and I appreciate all the comments today that did stay away from that as well. The last session of the legislature, in a budget note, directed the department, and I think people need to understand that that's where we get our marching orders from, is the legislature. They asked us to study the idea of placing the Oregon School for the Blind onto the campus of the Oregon School for the Deaf. And over the interim, the department did work hard on that budget note, and through a very thoughtful and careful work of a study committee, it became clear that the department could do a better job, particularly in the area of communication. The balancing act of communication and micromanaging and perceptions, I understand from being a manager in public education that that's a fine balance to work out. But it was clear that we could be doing that. You also, if you did remember reading the work of the committee, there was a conversation around should the department be in the business of running schools. And we asked ourselves that question too. At the time, the only recommendation that came out was one for contracting out with another public education entity, which exactly were the wording in the budget note for us to study. At that time, the committee said that would get the department out of running schools and into an arena of public education. That was the question we were answering at the time, not whether it should be a board of trustees or all else, but we looked at that. And if you recall, there was a lot of consternation about that, and the superintendent did decide not to move forward with contracting the programs out to another public entity. Overall, the schools are a part of a whole service delivery statewide for students who are deaf and hard of hearing or blind or visually impaired. And our job, of course, is to make sure that all of those students get the services that they need, whether it's at their home school or whether it's in a state school or whether it's on a part-time basis. Whatever they need is driven by an individual education plan. In the short term, the department has done some things to try to ease the changes that were going on at the same time that we're talking about this budget note. We did place a full-time administrator there just to make sure that schooling continued and pending hiring of a new director. We were asking, because again of some of the public hearing we've listened to, asking the state police to conduct a safety assessment of the grounds and the buildings, and that's going to be started sometime, I think, in March. Again, because of some of the public hearings and the concerns, we wanted to get some advice from them. We created an advisory board who helped us with suggestions on the criteria for a new director and hiring and recruiting. That committee just finished their work. We're waiting to see their product as well.
Ms. Lestini, can I stop you there and ask you a quick question?
Yes.
About the advisory board?
Uh-huh.
Who was on the advisory board? Anyone from the two schools?
The advisory board included staff from the schools, a regional person, some community people. I think what they did was ask people to recommend people, like
okay.
The schools did, the agencies that work with sensory impaired, blind people, I should say, at this point, people are blind, recommended people, and there were about 12 people, I think, on
okay.
that committee.
Okay, great.
Clearly, the budget note did ask the department to change the status quo, and in fact, when we were reporting back to the Joint Audit Committee, Legislative Audit Committee, we were lauded for trying to think outside of the box when we looked at the statewide system, again, of serving students who are sensory impaired. If this bill moves forward, we hope that you'd consider a couple of concerns that we had, and I think some of them were already addressed by some of the people who presented earlier. At a generic management level, the accountability and responsibility are not clearly delineated. We're not quite sure who is responsible for what, and it would make it difficult. From a public entity perspective, the structure right now seems to look like a distance between the general public has lengthened. The management before would have been looking at the public, the elected official, and the direct connection to the schools, and now there would be another entity within there and more than one public official, unless you remove one public official as was recommended. The structure also gives school districts another entity to deal with. The schools have been asking us for a long time, and because I've been a colleague of theirs for a long time, they certainly can tell me what they think freely, and have asked if there was a way to streamline and integrate the services so that there wasn't a separate system for looking at placement of students when at the schools. I'm not sure that they're going to see this as a better coordinated system. We have not included and talked about the other services that are available to students who are sensory impaired. The fiscal efficiencies that were requested as a response in the budget note are not included in this bill. And the bill disperses accountability from one specific elected official to a combination of appointed and elected officials as it is written right now. I thank you for listening to me, and I know you're busy with another bill hearing.
Thank you, Ms. Lettini. And this is just to give us a quick overview. What I anticipate doing for all of those in attendance and listening out there in TV land is to appoint a work group that I will chair, and we'll have some interested folks in the governor's office involved in that discussion, and we'll take these things that we've heard today and talk specifically about them and how we can make this bill better. It is my intention to try to do something this session with this bill. How far we get, I'm not sure, but I'm pretty good at getting down and digging under the details. So I appreciate that. One of the things that I am concerned about is the drop in enrollment and the pullback of the weekend program, which I think has led to a drop in the enrollment in the two schools. And so if you could sort of give some thought to that when we come to the work group, I'd like to have a discussion about that. And then we'll set this for another hearing down the road. Okay, any questions from the committee? Thank you all very much. I appreciate your testimony and your attendance. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 757. Colleagues, we are going to go till 10:30 today because the committee was started late. If you have to leave, let me know because we do have a work session and a public hearing. I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 477. Ms. Richardson, what's this bill about?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 477 directs the Department of Education to enter into a contract with one or more architects for school construction plans. It directs the department to make plans available to schools at no cost. The idea is to have a repository of templates for schools to draw on as they and take upon school construction projects. This bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, great. Senator Beyer, I know I gave you 40 minutes for this bill. I'm going to have to chop that down. I think this will just get it started. Can you come up and give us your thoughts? And then we'll hear from Brian Reeder and Cindy Robert.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Roger Byer, State Senator, District 9. Thank you for hearing this bill. I'm submitting written testimony, so I'll try to be very brief in my discussion of the bill. The concept or the reason the bill was brought forward is kind of a chicken and egg scenario we have in many local school districts around the state. You've got school boards who are unwilling to spend literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, doing design projects for school construction prior to a bond being passed to know if they're going to be able to build a building. And you've got voters who are saying, we don't know what you're going to build, so and we're not going to vote yes until we know what the plan is. So you've got this, you know, opposing views out there that don't seem to be able to reconcile. So I introduced this bill as a thought to way to get beyond that, so local school boards and patrons in the districts would be able to at least have an idea of what it would, you know, what they're looking at and what it's going to cost, and as a good starting point. Since I introduced the bill, I had discussions with the Education Department, Governor's Office, and School Boards Association to talk about the issue and see if we're a different way to approach this problem. And in the written testimony, we've agreed to completely change the concept of the bill in the following way. And it would make the Department of Education a clearinghouse for plans that have already been built in the state. We would require local school districts to turn their plans over once a building is built, the plans and all the documentation that goes with the plans, change orders and costs and everything else. We would allow then any other school district in the state to use those plans to, you know, coming up to their own bond issuance, use the plans to design or starting point of a design, whatever the use they would wish in those with those plans. We would also require school boards to discuss and decide on changes that are purely for cosmetic reasons in open board meetings and have a complete cost analysis of those changes prior to, so the public would know, you know, if the plan calls for a gray brick and the school, you know, and the builder, somebody says, you know, we can use this red brick, it would look a lot better. Know what the cost is before in an open board meeting before that discussion or decision is made. And finally, to have prior to deciding to do a green building or not, to have a cost benefit analysis done to make sure that it pencils out. Those are what the five ideas we came up with. So I guess what I would propose at this point in time would be I'd like to hear from the opponents of the bill and work with them to see if there's a way we come to agreement on these ideas, and then go and from you, any questions, any comments, any ideas you would have to make a better bill, and then go to Legislative Council, have an amendment drafted, and bring the bill back at a later date with that concept. Madam Chair, that's what I have in mind. If you would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Well, I think we'll just bring up the other two folks. You want to just stay there and have the other two come up? Brian and Cindy, you want to come up? What is that noise?
It's a dog, isn't it?
It sounds like a dog in the heater system.
I think it's Champ.
It's Gardner.
Charm. Charm's a champ.
Yeah. All right. Mr. Reeder, introduce yourself, please.
Chair Walker, members of the committee, Brian Reeder, Oregon Department of Education. Department had some real concerns with the original bill for a couple reasons. First, we have no particular expertise in designing school buildings or working with architects to do that. That the bill contained, it's an expensive proposition to design school buildings, as Senator Byer indicated, and the bill contained no budget for the department to do that. The changes that the Senator has described, the department feels are a far superior approach to set up sort of a repository of existing plans that districts can tap into, and if there are plans there that either meet their needs entirely or can be modified to meet their needs at a far lower cost than starting from scratch, that makes perfect sense. So we would look forward to working in that direction as opposed to having the department be responsible for creating school plans.
And you have experience at data collection and repository
yes,
sort of work. Okay, terrific. Well, Ms. Robert, how do the architects feel about all this?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert, and I'm proud to represent the American Institute of Architects in Oregon. First of all, I make a habit of coming to these committees with some alternative instead of saying no. It's important to me. I don't think any legislator comes here looking for an end that's ridiculous. It's the means that sometimes need some help. And I would say, honestly, I spoke with Senator Beyer a few weeks ago when this bill first came out and told him that I was committed to finding something that I thought worked. We at that time discussed these amendments that he has brought forward, and about half of my architects said that might work and half said that won't work, and let me tell you briefly why. You have in front of you national papers on this stock school plan issue, and the three things that I would summarize this down to is this has been tried. It's not a cost saver, and it's actually a liability and litigation issue. A total of 25 states have already tried standardized school plans. I have that list of states for you. I'll leave it here for you, as well as two studies, one from Virginia and one from Georgia, that show why it didn't work for them and why all 25 states have now abandoned stock school plan programs. Secondly, the short-term savings of using the stock school plan are negated by the cost of adapting a project to a specific site. The actual design costs in building schools is between 3-4% of the overall building cost. That's not a lot of money, and actually, when it comes down to it, not that I would advocate for changing this, system development charges, permit fees, and other city issues that have to be paid for actually usually come out to be more than the design fee. And finally, there's a liability issue here. We don't do a product, we do a service. And having a product go to the Department of Education and sit for someone else to use causes problems both with trademark and copyright, but also with the fact that it is against the law in Oregon for one architect to modify another architect's plans and stamp those. Insurance companies say that using stock plans results in poorly adapted designs, which increases litigation in our courts. So those are just three of the problems we have, but as I said, I think the end is noble, and I am dedicated. I brought to Dana yesterday a whole bunch of information. I'm dedicated to going through that information and finding someone's example of a way to work on this problem, especially for rural areas, save some money, and have that work. I'm going to continue to look for that solution in hopes that perhaps it will meet the senator's ends as well, because it is a noble end.
Any questions from the committee? Yes, Senator Metzger.
Well, maybe an observation, and maybe Senator Beyer may want to comment or others on this, because I haven't talked to Senator Beyer about, you know, what developed or created his interest in this bill, but I would assume it's, you know, trying to reduce cost and, you know, for school construction. But one thing I noticed in one of my own districts, North Clackamas, which was a real example, and I won't go into details of it, but it prompted a very interesting discussion with a citizen in my district, in the North Clackamas School District, who works for a design build company, R.F. Stearns Distill Design Build, and a lot of very major projects, built a lot of cruiseway in the area, and had been involved with the school district. And we had a situation, and this is not unlike just about every other district. You know, they have a school, and they get an architect, and they pay all this money. Then they go for a bond, and they hire a separate construction company to do this. And in this one particular example, the construction company had to be replaced. And the cost of having all these disparate individuals involved and then trying to adapt the architect to the new bond money, or if they get extra money, putting stuff in that really wasn't part of the plan. And I think his admonition was, and something that I think is worth exploring, I don't know if it's necessarily through legislation, but I think it gets to what Senator Beyer is trying to accomplish is, in terms of trying to have a more cost-effective way of school construction, is to work on trying to educate some of our school boards who aren't necessarily in the construction business, and realize the advantage to the taxpayers. Because like you talk about, when they go to bond levies and sometimes original ideas change, the idea of going into more of a design-build concept where you have, you know, someone who is responsible and qualified who is in charge of the entire project, so that everything really works together, and you're not changing things at tremendous cost because you hire all these different people who aren't integrated. And business has realized that in major office buildings that design build, where someone is in charge of the design and the architecture, the construction of this, really is a cost saver, especially when changes are made because it's all integrated together. And but I think we have these old models, and when they hire individual people, and then things change, and they're trying to adapt some other one's work, and usually having to pay a lot more money. And it certainly happened in Clackamas, and again, I don't know if that's a legislative thing, but it certainly is an approach that I think that the school boards need to look at more in terms of trying to have cost-effective school construction, is to look at the model that business now uses for most major projects, is a design build where one firm is responsible for all of that, and that dotted line is signed for that entire process.
Madam Chair and Senator Metzger, I appreciate your comments on design build, and I have been an advocate of design build, and I think if you were to check the statutes, school districts do have the authority now to use design build if they so choose. Maybe there's some, we could do something more to try to encourage that, but so far I think the statutes work pretty well on that arena where it's an option for them to do today. As a little background, I know you're in a hurry to get moving on, but what really brought this to my attention was this last November, two school districts in my legislative district both had bonds, school building bonds on the ballot. Silverton District, where they had a plan, Molalla District, where they didn't. The one in Silverton passed, very narrowly, but it passed. The one in Molalla didn't. And the biggest complaint I heard in Molalla was, is that we don't know what they want to do with the money. They don't have a plan. Mm-hmm. And the one in Silverton, they said, well, yeah, it's a lot of money, but at least we know what they're going to do with it. So that's what brought me to this, that, it is kind of a chicken and egg thing. Which do you do first? And school districts, right. They're rightfully so, just unwilling to spend, and it was literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, on design up front before they know if they're going to be able to build something. Mm-hmm. And that's quite a problem.
Well, it's interesting you're all talking about design build, because Senator Morse has concerns about that process, and we're probably actually going to be hearing some stuff on design build later on this month. I'd be happy for you to talk to Senator Morris. Ms. Robert, you have a final comment?
Madam Chair, if I might, the design-build concept is actually used on public buildings in Oregon, but schools have a different public purchasing area of statute, so that's why it's not used there. However, you've put your finger on something, Senator Metzger, that I think is very important. One of the highest cost drivers in these kind of big buildings, schools in particular, is change orders. And change orders and the delays that they cause are a huge problem. And frankly, when you're using someone else's plan and you're dissecting it and making it work for your area, those change orders are even larger. Secondly, on the issue that Senator Beyer brings up about the two schools, and the one that had the finished product had a better time convincing voters to vote for it. It's an excellent point, and actually, while I think that stock plans create minimum schools, not basic schools, I think that the point of having a plan is maybe something that if we can't come to some kind of better program here, maybe that's something that the new Architecture Center in Portland could start helping with, is providing those plans for free in advance mm-hmm. of building, in order to have some kind of arrangement made for a vote. Architects, and I meant to bring you in a book, and I'll bring it to you soon. We have a new campaign. It's called the Give and Take Campaign. The give is getting involved in volunteer efforts, and it lays out all the things that architects have been doing in Oregon, nationally and around the world, and the take is talking about our knowledge and experience. It's to show you what it is that makes us different. Behind the doctor and the lawyer, we're the most educated profession in the state for state requirements. So we're doing a lot of things for our education and for our environment, and this is actually one of those that I think that the new center, architects center could certainly help with if we don't come to some kind of statutory resolution. And on a final note, we are doing a LEEDS gold standard legislation in a different committee. Schools are currently included, but the very first thing I will do when our committee meets again is talk to them about this cost-benefit analysis that the senator brings up for building green in schools. I think he brings up a good point.
Okay. Well, Senator, I'm going to send you off to do your little work group. This one I'm not on. Encourage you to do good things. I think I would bring in the School Boards Association, because Senator Metzger raised a good point about education of school boards as they're working on going out with bond measures, and I just think they might be able to provide some insight as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have discussed it with the School Board Association already, and we'll include them as I'm talking with the architects and engineers and Department of Education and anyone else. Thank you. Okay, great.
Thank you. We'll see you again. Senate Bill 477 will close the public hearing. Open a work session on Senate Bill 261. And those who wanted to, we're going to invite some folks up to testify to tell us about these amendments. Ms. Richardson, you want to talk to us about that? And who do we have on tap to testify? Bob Jundeff. Okay, anyone else?
Gardner.
Jim Gardner. That's right. Okay, come on up while Ms. Richardson talks about it.
Madam Chair, we have a bill before us. We have dash one amendments and dash two amendments. I can speak to the bill and either both amendments, although I can tell you that I believe the advocates will focus mostly on the dash two amendments.
Okay.
So the bill itself requires publishers to provide instructional materials in alternative formats when requested by a post-secondary institution for use by students with disabilities for educational purposes. It defines terms related to instructional materials in alternative formats. The dash two amendment is a new bill, essentially. It states the purpose that all post-secondary students with print disabilities should have equal and effective access to instructional materials in alternative formats. It requires publishers, upon request from post-secondary education institutions, including for-profit institutions, to provide instructional materials in electronic formats. It provides exceptions. It authorizes the State Board of Higher Education to develop guidelines to administer the Act. It defines terms related to print disabilities and instructional materials in alternative formats, declares an emergency, would take effect July 1st, 2007.
Great. And I had Lisa Zavala from the Oregon University System pass me up a note that they're okay with the Dash 2 amendments. I gave her all morning to check it out with the board, and I said, you have 45 minutes, get it done. She did. So, gentlemen, who wants to start?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Gardner, I guess, Bob, I'll go first real quickly. Ms. Richardson has done an excellent summary of the Dash 2s. Parties are in agreement that the Dash 2s are the way to go. This is really quite an important bill, we think.
Mm-hmm.
If you see the statement on in Section 2, top of page 3, the purpose of this bill really is to ensure that to the maximum extent possible, all post-secondary students with print disability in Oregon who require reading accommodation in accordance with federal law shall have equal and effective access in alternative format, and that means Braille and talking books and the like, large print, to instructional materials provided by a post-secondary education. So this institution, this in effect contemplates a partnership between the publishing community in the DSS offices of the institutions of higher education. The bill also, in the Dash 2s, incorporates a reference to something that the committee may remember from our prior testimony on page 6, and it's a permissive provision that says that the State Board of Higher Education shall review the recommendations that AAP, the Association of American Publishers, is developing under their Alternative Formats Solutions Initiative and determine whether those recommendations should be incorporated into sections 1 through 5 of this Act. That's intended to be essentially a national protocol for use in preparing electronic formatted documents that can be turned over to institutions of higher education. Again, this is an important bill. It's a bill whose time has come, and we think it will significantly assist the DSS offices across the state in meeting the needs of students who require special assistance in accessing textbooks.
Mm-hmm.
We urge your adoption of the Dash 2s and passage of the bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Gardner. I'm glad we just don't have to wait on the national stuff anymore. We'll just move forward, and if it comes along, it comes along. So I appreciate that. Mr. Jundeff, identify yourself, please.
My name is Bob Jundeff. I'm with the Oregon Advocacy Center. I'm chair and members of the committee. And first of all, I'd like to thank Mr. Gardner and his client, textbook manufacturers, for really working with us to get a good product. And I believe that the product before you is an improvement over the original bill. We were able to work out some fine points that clarify what the purpose of the bill is. And very quickly, as a result of the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Rehabilitation Act, the federal law, there is a requirement that post-secondary institutions, colleges, provide disabled students with materials and formats that they can take advantage of. The intent of this bill was not to require textbook manufacturers to assume the duties of colleges. What it was designed to do was to make it easier for those colleges to fulfill their duties. And so a number of the areas where we clarified language made sure that it was absolutely clear that it wasn't the manufacturers who now had the responsibility that the law places upon the colleges, but that the manufacturer now is going to provide materials and make it easier for this to happen so that it can happen more quickly so that those students can get their materials easier and more efficiently. And I believe that the amendments that you have before you accomplish that. Again, I think it's a very good product and encourage you to move it through.
Great. Thank you.
Want it?
Yeah, let's have a discussion. So you want to...
Madam Chair, I'll move the Dash 2 amendment, Senate Bill 261.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 261. Any discussion? Any further discussion?
Madam Chair, it's great that the parties have come together, and personally, I'm satisfied with the discussion that we have a good product.
Yeah, I think so. I want to thank the Student Association, the Oregon Student Association, as well, for being diligent and making sure their students have the same rights as all students have the same rights as one another. And Mr. Jundeff, your association is always a great advocate for those with disabilities, and I appreciate that. Any objection to the Dash 2s? Then so accepted.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 261 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 261 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Okay, Ms. Gravel, call the roll, please.
Aye.
Oh, excused.
Senator
Beckman?
Aye.
Vice Chair?
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 261 moves to the floor of the Senate. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank everyone for working on this. Do I have a carrier for this bill? Somebody?
Senator Cruz.
Want to do it?
Sure.
Jeff? Sure. Thank you. Okay, Senator Cruz. All right. Thanks, folks. Appreciate your attendance today. We'll see you next week. We're adjourned.